Did you know we have completely ad-free early access to all of our episodes? Well, we do. Not only that, but we have dozens of bonus episodes waiting for you. Head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod, and you can check it out for 7 days absolutely free. That's patreon.com/ghosttownpod.
Video killed the video star. I'm Rebecca Lieb.
I'm Jason Horton.
And this is Ghost Town.
In the late 1990s, as DVD technology was gaining momentum, Circuit City, a major electronics retailer in the U.S. Remember Circuit City?
I remember Circuit City? Ooh, a lot of time in there.
Not enough, apparently.
No, but I do remember on this hot L.A. day, the air conditioning there was pristine.
Circuit City embarked on an ambitious venture to revolutionize the home video market. The initiative was the Digital Video Express, commonly known as DivX. The way we've received and watched video on demand, it was a bumpy road. But nobody thinks it's going to be a bumpy road, but it's bumpy as hell.
Well, you get excited about new technologies and how it can serve people, especially in entertainment and camcorders, kind of TV viewing experiences. It's like, I feel like so many companies were like, great, we're going to latch onto this technology, but we're going to do it in a way that obviously is like evolving and clunky. But like, I love all these. Even Netflix, too, like getting the little DVD. This is a precursor to that, I would imagine.
However, what was envisioned as the game-changing format turned into a costly failure that contributed to Circuit City's eventual bankruptcy.
Oof.
Launched in June 1998, DivX was developed as an alternative to traditional DVDs. The idea behind DivX was to offer consumers a more flexible rental model. The discs were sold at a lower price, around $4 to $5, compared to standard DVDs. But there is a catch. They can only be viewed for 48 hours after being inserted into the DivX player.
I had no idea that this is like they're going to explode after 48 hours.
After this period, the disc would lock, requiring additional fee to unlock it for further viewing.
It's
kind of, I feel like this is technology that's in good, but not for this.
I don't hate it. I think, like, I understand where that came from, where, like, that idea would come from and, like, fly. But again, what are we doing here? Is this really something that, like, people are going to want to do and participate in?
Apparently not. To make this possible, DivX players were equipped with a modem that allowed them to connect to a central server, verifying the disc's status and charging the user accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
The concept was similar to a hybrid between rental and ownership, where consumers could pay for unlimited viewings of a disc by upgrading it to DivX Silver.
Ooh, I mean, it does sound sexy. I do like saying DivX. That's fun.
Bronze, it just explodes in your face.
Yeah. Bronze, you get shrapnel in your eyes. You can't watch anything.
While the concept seemed innovative, DivX faced significant challenges from the start. The standard DVD format was already gaining widespread acceptance, and the prospect of a new, more restrictive format didn't appeal to consumers. Additionally, the need for a special DivX player, coupled with the requirement to connect to the internet for verification, added another unnecessarily complexity, another step.
Yeah, it's the old Laserdisc challenge, where it's like, yeah, this is like cool, interesting technology, but like now you need to convert all of your shit to this to enjoy it. But I still, you know, now that we're talking, I do like the idea. You don't have to give it back. It just explodes. It just stops working.
Well, more for you to like after this break. The movie studios also showed limited support for DivX. Although some titles were released in the format, the selection was far more limited compared to standard DVDs. Consumers wary of investing in a potentially short-lived technology were reluctant to adopt DivX. Furthermore, the system faced criticism over consumer rights advocates who viewed it as an attempt to impose more control over users and limit their right to own and freely use the media they purchased.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you bought something. We're like the lien holder constantly on this thing, so you never really own it.
Uh-huh. Not to mention, I would imagine, even with a DVD you do buy and you legitimately own for the rest of its existence, those things scratch. They don't do well under duress. So let's say you do like rent it and then spray. It's like, how long is this going to last anyway?
By 1999, it was clear that DivX was failing. The lack of interest, coupled with high operational costs, forced Circuit City to abandon the DivX format in June 1999, just 1 year after its launch. They probably thought that was things like, well, how are we going to compete with blank? How are we going to compete with blank? And they thought this was like, let's just put it all in this. And
yeah, but you can't, unfortunately for something like this, I think, again, I think this is a good idea. I don't know, but it needed to have happened 5 years before. And so then DivX would have been the standard, and then everything else that came after would have had to compete with that as a standard.
Just 1 year after its launch, Circuit City incurred an estimated $114 million loss due to the failed venture. Ooh. It was a significant blow to Circuit City's finances and reputation. The company invested heavily in the project, and its failure highlighted poor decision-making at the executive level. While DivX was not the sole source of Circuit City's eventual bankruptcy, it was indicative of a larger pattern of strategic missteps.
It helped. It helped.
Through the 2000s, Circuit City faced increasing competition from rivals like Best Buy and obviously online giants like Amazon.
Sure.
The company struggled to adapt to changing marketing conditions and a series of management blunders only exacerbated by its decline. By 2008, Circuit City was in big trouble. After a failed attempt to find a buyer, the company filed for bankruptcy in November 2008 and closed all of its stores by March 2009. You know, when people talk about why did Circuit City fail? Why did Fry's Electronics around here? Why did any of these places fail? Always the go-to is, oh, it's Amazon. Mm. Oh, it's online. But we're talking about, you know, the mid-2000s. Most of the people who are saying that is like, you didn't even know it existed. Mm-hmm. You weren't even buying things online then. But everyone attributes these things. But they don't realize that there's so many, I mean, beside an executive level, maybe underpaying people, and then there's poor customer service, and then there's too much competition. There's like, we built three Circuit City stores next to each other. Yeah. That's what happens with the malls.
Yeah.
Everyone wants to blame the online stuff, but it was going downhill. It was going downhill when Amazon was a bookstore. Not that I'm here sticking up for Amazon, because I know it's part of the problem, but everyone, that's everyone's like go-to. And I was like, that's just not, that's just not the case if you just track the timeline. It's things like DVDs, like, yeah, DVDs are good, but why don't we like sell you something that we still own that, and you have to keep renting it from us.
Yeah.
So it's again, like you, it was very interesting.
Yeah. I mean, really, if you want to like blame something in shorthand, you could say technology or the internet, you know, changing times that people were not able, again, not even speaking about, you know, poor labor policies or, you know, strange like city planning management of the stores. It's just like these places had set a standard for business and they were not able to evolve to keep their businesses going. Yeah. 2005. Well, you know, like, yeah, who was buying stuff on Amazon? It was just bad ideas and mismanagement.
You know whose fault it is? Yours.